ప్రభునిత్యానం చ శ్రీయాద్వైతగదాధరశివ సదిగౌరభక్తవృంద హరే కృష్ణ హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ హరే రామ 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 హరే
Sudha Goswami says in Srimad Bhagavatam, by rendering devotional service under the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. So here we're saying a causeless knowledge means it's not caused by performing an activity. Right? So it's not karma. Or it's because you've studied. It's just coming from the devotional service itself. Right? You've rendered devotional service, and by the grace of the devotional service, by the grace of Krishna, then this is coming. Right? Yes.
I'm thinking, is it because of one's consciousness?
Because of one's consciousness? No, because then you're saying you are creating knowledge and you are creating detachment. Right? So knowledge and detachment are opulences of Krishna. Right? So then we can't claim we are the source of opulence. Right? We can be assistant to, but we can't claim that we are opulence. Right? Or the source of it. That's what we want, but that's why we like to think, I did it, that's why I worked so hard, I was so devotional, now that's why I'm so detached. Or I have so much knowledge. No. You can study all day, you won't know anything. Right? It won't lessen your attachment. Right? Because otherwise, you have persons who are studying, your theology, they're studying philosophy, they're studying, but they're not becoming more detached. And technically, as far as understanding how to apply this knowledge in their life, they're also not learning anything. And they do serious research. I mean, we sit here, discuss a little bit, we go back, we read a little bit, write our 200-word essay and like that. So, but they sit there and they work 10 hours a day for years. And they have to write, 100-page, 300-page, bigger, or be constantly publishing literature in a journal that is reviewed by their peers. And then, after so long, it's recognized. This guy knows something. But generally, most of the time, someone gets a PhD or this or that, it's no big deal. Nobody's jumping up and down. Maybe if they get, higher doctorate, habilitation, these things, then there'll be some, this is really special. But most of the time, it's not. So that means they're not actually getting something very significant from it, other than the satisfaction of dealing in the intellectual field. Right? Does that make sense? So, can you hear back there?
You can hear?
Yeah. So this causeless, it's not generated by your action. Because you do something, the Lord's pleased. Just like, let's say, someone does something nice for you. Right? And therefore you think, let me do something for them. So can you say, now you would say because they did something you feel like reciprocated, right? But if they then said, yeah, I did all those nice stuff for them, that's why they had to do this for me, what would you feel?
Disappointed.
Yeah, disappointed, annoyed, upset. So that's why it's causeless. Doesn't matter what you do, God doesn't have to reciprocate. You know, he says, he's not the rat bag. We are. We came to the material world. He's come here for us. What happened? Your smoke bucket is not giving you that full fullness that you were looking for. So that quantum of stillness has disappeared.
No matter how much you try to enjoy it,
you
can never lose it.
Yeah. You can always sit on this side and, yeah, sit there if it's far enough away. Ah. Thank you. Huh? Oh, okay. Whose is this?
Not a seat.
Oh, okay. Oh, you get from here.
Somehow.
Oh, between this one and that one, it's like, who recorded it? Okay. You got your bucket with you. That was good. You opened it and put it there. Then you pulled the rug in a bit. Okay, so continuing. Now, by carefully reviewing all the previous statements, we can understand that to remain uncovered by jnana and karma and so forth, which means accepting them as subservient entities, and engage in favorable cultivation of activities meant to please Sri Krishna, which are devoid of any other desire, is called uttama bhakti. Okay. So in other words, karma, jnana, and so forth, then it's subservient to bhakti. In no way do they generate bhakti, in no way are they equal to or superior to. So we accept them as in that position of subservience, then it can be appreciated. Then it can be appreciated just how much special is devotional service. Otherwise, the tendency is to think, I've done something, or I studied something, or I contemplated something, therefore I'm advancing. No, it's simply because Krishna's pleased, we're advancing. That's all. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So in the same way, it's not because I was offensive, that therefore there's a problem in my devotional service, because then it's still the element of karma. I performed good activities. I studied. I did my work. So therefore I'm advancing. And then I did bad work, so therefore I'm having a problem. No, it's because you did work that pleased Krishna and you advanced, and you did work that doesn't please Krishna, therefore there's an obstacle. Understand? It's Krishna's potency. It's not ours, because otherwise then we're saying, I have control over it. Right? And when it doesn't go the way we want, then I don't have control, right? If it's good happening, I do good work, I have control. I did the work, I got the result. Bad things are coming, then you know, I'm controlled by the bad work, what can I do? You know, but it's still the thing is fun. Yeah.
Sometimes it may be difficult to realize why we're getting bad results. Is it past karma that is maturing, or is it present activities that does not lead to
it? And it has to be one or the other.
Well, I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff off in the air. When something's not going our way, where do we correct?
Where do we correct? I mean, first you look at what's immediate. Mm. Because the point is, you can only deal with the present.
Yeah.
So, and the only reason to look at the past is to see how that's affecting the present, or by the past did that generate a habit that we're doing now, right? It's not that, oh, that happened then, so now this is happening, there's nothing I can do about it. That's the mode of ignorance. You know, we can say, no, but I understand karma. We're understanding karma, but after understanding it, we're still applying ignorance. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that the person's hungry, so it's just consideration of the body. And he knows, hey, it's Sunday afternoon, the Haris are giving out free food. So he goes to eat, but he's doing devotional service. You know what I'm saying? So there's your understanding of it, and then there's what you do with it. Right? Because sambandha means understanding the field, understanding the situation. But abhideya is what you do with it. So it's the abhideya that gives you the result, not the sambandha. The sambandha is the potential result. Right? But it's not the cause of the result. Abhideya is what generates. You know what I'm saying? But the point with devotional service, because you're performing devotional service, Krishna being pleased, he's reciprocating with that. Right? So you look at the present, you look at the past, you look at all that. The point is things aren't going well because, you know, we haven't been, you could say, there's a word for it, but, you know, you're setting the perfect example. You know, you do everything nice and everyone can look to you for the right thing.
The role model.
Huh?
The role model.
Yeah, the role model of, you know, perfection, right?
The parents is not impeccable.
Yeah, the parents is not impeccable, so all these things. So, but if you can't find any reason, but still, it ultimately goes back to Krishna. So Krishna has some reasons why. Yeah. You know, it may be, you know, 10 lifetimes ago you did something and then now it's coming. You don't know what that you did the 10 lifetimes. You don't even know what you did last life. But generally you can tell, Prabhupada mentions, you can tell what previous lifetimes and activities by this life.
Yeah.
Because otherwise why are you situated where you're situated? What's important to you? What is this? So that you can tell that was there. Details aren't important. You know, it's just that's what's involved. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say I say, yesterday I'm looking, so yesterday you ate lunch. You know, and then you go, who cares? You know? Like that. You went to the toilet.
I actually had lunch twice.
Yeah, so it doesn't, you don't care. So what does it matter if someone said, oh, in your last life you were this one? We go, oh, wow. It's like, so what? You're still here. You know? You know, if they say, last life you were a great devotee, the time of death you thought of Krishna, like that. And then the question, why am I here? That is, they say, you know, if they say, last life, you know, you were this, you were that. Yeah, and I'm still here. You know, so it's like... Okay, but if you can't tell, it's Krishna. He's arranging. Because there's some, by obstacles, then you reassess your situation. If that purity is there, you'll reassess it in connection with devotional service. And if we're, and to that degree we're not, we may reassess it in either, if we have more faith in the material energy and what we can do, you know, we feel empowered, okay, then I'll do this, I'll do that, and still forget Krishna. Or then we will see it that, you know, I'm overwhelmed, that I'm a victim of circumstance, it's everybody else's fault, and if you can't figure out why, then it must be God's fault, you know, like this. So that's mode of ignorance, mode of passion, they'll work it out. Mode of goodness is then with knowledge you understand what should be done. Yes?
You mentioned in the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, this means you have pure faith.
Connecting the 17th chapter again, pure faith. Yes, you could say pure faith. Because pure faith means it's being done. Pure, we mean goodness, right? Or pure goodness. So goodness means knowledge. Goodness means the ability to perform your duties because they should be done, right? Like that. So that means we understand the remain Ankarabha Karma and Jnana, which means that there's something junior. Then it's only by engaging in favorable devotional service. So that means that faith. There must be that kind of faith. Because we saw in the beginning, that the point's being made is that it's faith and the devotion, association of the devotees practicing devotional service there for Krishna's blessing that the process works, right? So faith is there, means then it's dynamic from our side. That Agyata Sukriti means that the faith is there from the side of the devotees. They have faith, therefore they're out preaching and giving you association. Then taking that association, we then develop in our devotional, we develop devotion. Right? Then faith comes. Then now with faith, we ourselves make our own commitment to follow. Is that what you're saying? Okay. Yes.
I wonder if he's one of subservient.
Subservient.
Yeah. This is where the devotees miss when they will reject all these things from God himself and they have to be engaged.
Yes, you could say. That would be one way of, is that if one doesn't understand the subservient nature, then one won't be able to engage them in service. So if one doesn't see the subservient nature, you can either end up thinking they're equal to or superior to bhakti, or they're the cause of bhakti. The other is that they have nothing to do or no relevance in connection with bhakti, because they're the cause of something.
Like karma and
yang. Karma and yang, yeah. But also the Niyamagraha, that you follow it, but you don't understand the position, or all these different things, or the rules coming from that side. Oh, thank you. It's been saving me. So if it's subservient, that means it's an assistant to bhakti. So karma and jnana can be used in the service of bhakti. So they're never not useful. It's just a matter of if you have a use for them. Does that make sense? To the brahmachari, family life is not useful. For the grihastha, it is. So it's just your situation. It's not that it's inherently good or bad. Does that make sense? Like that. So that because we identify with the mundane, karma and jnana, we identify with the forms of karma and jnana. Therefore, we're given forms to focus on to begin our understanding of the devotional process. Does that make sense? Is that good? Bhakti is the only means by which jiva can obtain transcendental bliss. Besides bhakti, all other methods are external. With the assistance of bhakti, sometimes karma is identified as aropya siddhi bhakti, or endeavors which are indirectly attributed with the quality of devotion. And sometimes jnana is identified as sangha siddhi bhakti, or endeavors associated with or favorable to the cultivation of devotion. But they can never be accepted as sarup siddhi bhakti, or bhakti in its constitutional perfection state. So here is, these are the fancy words for karma misra and jnana misra bhakti. What is happening, karma misra means it's aropya siddhi bhakti. Right? And jnana yoga or jnana misra is called sangha siddhi bhakti. Right? In other words, here then, aropya siddhi is that you're taking something that looks like, and then that element of it that looks like it, you're seeing it in relationship to Krishna. Right? Then it becomes in that way favorable. So because it's favorable, that's fine, that's progressive, but one should never compare it that it's equal to pure devotion. That's where the mistake is. So the point that one is engaging karma and jnana in the Lord's service, that's not the problem. Right? The difficulty is you think it's the same. That's the point. One has to be able to distinguish. You know, and also it's a matter of here is that assistance of bhakti, sometimes karma is identified. So in other words, karma is the predominant element, but it's assisted by bhakti. In other words, we've added bhakti to it. Right? Yeah, we could say like that. Means written into ritual, it would be that to engage in the karma kanda rituals, you still have to associate with a Brahman. Right? It has to be based on Shastra. Now if that Brahman is a devotee, he's going to instruct you in the line of devotion. You're still going to do the ritual, but he'll be bringing out those elements, so you'll advance. If he's not, then, you know, it won't happen. You know, like Maharaj Kuchina Barhisha. All his Brahmins were Karmakanda, so he never heard of anything higher. He didn't know Jnanakanda or Bhakti existed. Because his association with the Brahmins never gave that aspect. So only when Narad Muni came, because, you know, he was so far gone, Narad Muni came. And then, you know, instructed him what actually is going on, the reality. So, and in jnana, that's what jnana sangha is, that in jnana, it's all based on discussing philosophy, and generally it's there's a lot of sangha. So that you have association with an advanced devotee, then you get some benefit. So they're underlying in the principle. So even the straight, what we would call karmakanda, jnanakanda sections, there's still bhakti is written into them. Though someone who does not understand bhakti won't know this, and may not appreciate the you know, those elements or the significance of it. So they're here. Now the devotee is trying to do devotional service. But there may be, so let's say we're in the temple, we're cleaning the temple. So that's basically, that's devotional service, but it's got some karma in it. Because we may think, you know, buy this, then they'll think, you know, I'm doing the best, or, you know, something will get out of it, you know, we'll get some Mahaprasad, something. So there's some element that's in there. It's mixed, but the basic thing is, it's devotional service, that there's a little bit of karma in it. This other one that we're talking about is taking the other way. It's an aspect that if you weren't a devotee, you'd be doing it, and if you're a devotee, you're still doing it. Right? Something when you go home, yeah, I want to eat this, or I want to eat that, or I want to do this, I want to do that. So you're going to do that anyway. But as a devotee, you're making some adjustments. Right? So therefore, bhakti is assisting the karma. Does that make sense? Right? So, and then even we add the knowledge, we're seeing that, so the jnana is adding to that. We are going to interact with the family. We are attached to the family. But then we start to understand, well, it's not directly the family, it's the potencies of Krishna that I'm appreciating that are manifesting through the individual family members of the particular interactions. But it's still the bhakti and the not, all these things are assisting them. Does that make sense? So it's still, the mix is there. But it's just how that mix is there. Does that make sense? You know. So generally you wouldn't call chanting your japa a ropya siddhi, or, you know what I'm saying? You would call that, you know, devotional service, but it's mixed. It's not pure chanting, or not pure. Right? But if you're taking those elements that can be easily identified as karma and jnana, but you're connecting them to Krishna, then we would call it aropya siddhi or sangha siddhi. Does that make sense? Same thing. The principle is the same, is that there's a mix.
whether you're starting with the devotional and then the karma is still there from habit, or you're starting with the karma that's there from habit and adding some devotion. Is that make sense? Yeah. So the important thing is to know that it's still different from pure, you know, devotion. Right? So our intent may be pure, but there's still maybe some mix. So that's good. That'll be progressive. When the intent is not pure, then the progression will be slow. You know what I'm saying? It's just like there's the difference between, let's say you have someone who's newly come in contact with Krishna consciousness. Right? But, you know, their lifestyle is such that they're still exactly where they were. There hasn't been time or even the thought of the need to adjust their lifestyle. Right? So all week they're doing whatever they do. You know, they're working and they're doing things with their family, going out visiting friends. But now they've added little Krishna. They'll talk about that a bit. And then on the weekend or something, they'll go to the temple and spend the time. Right? But the intent is that, you know, this Krishna consciousness, the new thing, it's that. So, you understand? That'll be different from someone who, no, it's good enough that I go to the temple once a week. I'm busy, I'm practical. You know, no one, you know, it's fanatic to consider that I should, you know, try to add more. So that will be slow. You understand? Even though the situation is the same. Right? So always the mentality is there, because even though you have two things, one way it means one thing, the other way it means another. Right? Like, if there's smoke, there'll always be fire. Right? But you can have fire that doesn't have smoke. You understand? So that's the point, is that it's not automatic that the two things are connected. Right? One way they may be, another way they're not. You know what I'm saying? Or it can be, one could say, that yes, the devotee who is more senior, and they only go once a week, they're advancing just as much, if not more, than the new person who only goes to the temple once a week. Right? But in comparison to what they could be advancing for their level of understanding in that, then it's not as significant as it could be. Does that make sense? Right. Okay. But they can never be accepted as Swarup Siddhi Bhakti, or Bhakti in its constitutional perfection state, right? Its natural constitution. Swarup Siddhi Bhakti is Kaitava Shunya, or free from any deceit, and full of unalloyed bliss by nature, meaning that is devoid of any of the desires for heavenly enjoyment or attaining liberation. Oh, my dear Vaishnavas, by your constitutional position, you are attracted to Swarup Siddhi Bhakti and have no taste for Arupya Siddhi Bhakti or Sangha Siddhi Bhakti. Although these two types of devotion are not actually bhakti by their constitution, some people call them bhakti. In fact, they are not bhakti, but bhaktyabhash, or the semblance of real bhakti. If by some good fortune, through the practice of bhaktyabhash, one develops shraddha for the true nature of bhakti, then only such practice transforms into shuddha bhakti. But this does not happen easily, because by the practice of bhaktyabhash, there exists every possibility of remaining bereft of Shuddha Bhakti. Therefore, all scriptures instruct us to follow Swarup Siddhi Bhakti. Right? In other words, by studying these differences, otherwise one can say, oh, this is all very technical. But unless you can tell the difference, how is it sure that that is what you're endeavoring for? Right? The conclusion is that Sri Krishna is the complete, all-pervading consciousness, who always possesses all potencies, and the jiva is the infinitesimal conscious entity who is likened to a single particle of light situated within a ray of the unlimited spiritual sun. The natural and unadulterated endeavor of the infinitesimal conscious entity towards the complete conscious is called bhakti. the jiva's persistence towards anyavilasita, acting to fulfill desires other than the desire to please Sri Krishna. Jnana and karma is always called acquiring material designation. We should understand that the natural inherent endeavor of the jiva can only mean the favorable cultivation of activities to please Sri Krishna. So I thought that was the question. But okay. Interesting to note just in the language that in this paragraph he is saying the jiva, because you're applying it. So he's saying the jiva. But in the above, he says, bhakti is the only means by which jiva can attain transcendental bliss. Jiva meaning jiva as a category. Does that make sense? He's not, because there it's not meant the jiva. Of course, it applies to the individual, the jiva. But here he's just meaning jiva. You know, you have the dog and you have dogs. You know, but here it's not jivas, because jiva is a tattva. You say jiva tattva, not jiva's tattva. Right? You know, like in English, jeez tattva. Yes?
So this state of impurity means that there is lack of this pure faith, and after billions of, as discussed last time, then the Agyata Bhakti Sukriti will accumulate to each other.
It can happen quicker. That what we were discussing, the billion, was by saying by performance of, wasn't it? It was connected to the Varnashram or some pious activities. Yeah. So here we're saying it's devotional, but it's just saying on their own it will take that long. But the association of the devotees can hurry that up. Because the thing is you're looking at it by your own, it's going to take you a long time of coming in, even you're coming in contact with devotional service. Before you take it up. I know one situation where there's a devotee, and not a junior devotee, and they're living with, and they've been living with for the past 10 years, with, you'd have to say, a karmi. You can't say, you know, so they're not unfavorable to devotional service. They don't mind that the partner is engaged in devotional service. You know, offers all the food, does everything like that, everything's about Krishna, this, that, blah. They don't mind it. But the interesting thing is, and they'll take prasad, this, that, but they make zero endeavor themselves. They don't chant, they don't do anything. In fact, they're actually an atheist. They don't believe in God. You know, just a pleasant atheist. So here, 10 years association, and there's no interest to take up the process. Right? And they've just gone through, you know, because of their natural, you know, how you say, constitutional sinful habits as a malecha. Then they've just gone through, you know, all kinds of cancer operations, and now they didn't tell them before, now they get to, having finished the operation, now they get to go through radiation and chemo. Like that. They didn't tell them before the operation. Like that. So, then, but still, it's not coming up that, you know, maybe they should surrender or something. No, still atheistic. You know what I'm saying? So the point is the jiva is not necessary that even coming in contact with the devotees are going to take up the process. So therefore, the interest in the preaching, right? Because Lord Chaitanya, they're preaching, but so many are not getting affected, right? He's saying this ocean of bhakti is flooding the world, but the prashandis, they're still floating. Yeah, they're not drowning in this ocean of nectar. You know, so how to catch them? That's the preaching thing. It's not how to not disturb them so that they all think that we're normal, you know, upstanding, you know, middle class, you know, like this. But if you're really upstanding, you know, how much time you spent in the army, you know, did you get an award, you know, what are you doing for local charities and different things like that? Are you doing those things? If you're not, then what's the definition of upstanding? You know, if you're just fitting into the, you know, campus kind of like definition, it's kind of like you're not in the campus anymore. you're over 30. Anyone at the campus thinks you're a loser. You know, sorry for using the term. I know it's a delicate term, but, you know, like that. So the point is it's we take the initiative to figure out how to catch these people and to give them association in a way that they'll appreciate it, that they take up devotional service, not appreciate you, you're a nice guy. Great. It doesn't mean you can't be a nice guy and give them devotional service. The two aren't opposed to each other. Right? We may have the concept that dynamic rah-rah preaching means it has to be, you know, how you say, rough. Or what's the Australian saying? Rough as guts, right? That's the Australian, you know? Like that. So it doesn't have to be like that. It's just, it can be pleasant, but be direct. That's even more impressive. At least to the people that you're trying to impress. Right? Okay? So in other words, we should be seeing that all these stages, the karma yoga, the jnana yoga, the saropya, you know, siddhi bhakti, the sangha siddhi bhakti, we understand that they're useful methods, but we should never confuse them with pure devotional service. Right? That's the point. If you don't confuse them, then you can see that karma and jnana are subservient to bhakti, and therefore, according to one's realization, engage them in the service of bhakti, and this way advance. But never think, yes, I'm great and special. That's where being humble, being tolerant, not looking for respect for oneself, respecting others, right? One's respectful of others because of their, you know, connection to God, you know, their being the Lord's energy, or the particular qualities that they have that are coming from God that are worth respecting, or the service they've rendered, right? And we avoid criticizing what are their problems, and we're humble ourselves and not looking for respect because we know, you know, what our weaknesses are, right? You know, so it's just, one is real. One knows who one is. Like that. Okay. It's just a fact. It's not a matter of, you know what I'm saying? It's not about humble me. Oh, I'm so disgusting. I'm so terrible. I'm pond scum. I'm like this. That's not the point. That's the, when the acharyas say I'm you know, the most fallen or like this, they're talking about the situation they're in. You know, they're not talking about their understanding that pure unalloyed devotional service is the top endeavor. Does that make sense? They're just saying that by my conditioning, I'm at this point, so that's very fallen. You know, and so I have to get from there to pure devotion. So by Krishna's grace, so they're praying to Krishna. Since it is His grace that you advance. It's not because I've done the service. Right? Does that make sense? But the grace comes through the service. Okay, we're good with, yes. Yes. But then the tendency is, if that pride is there, is we think that because I've done it, therefore I've gotten the result. But if we understand this, then it's another tool to be able to work out that I'm not the doer. Right? Because you can only become proud of something you've done. Right? So if we understand it's Krishna, then the pride won't be there. Yeah, it's very important. Okay. So now the second section, page 9, Guru Para Ashraya, accepting the shelter of the lotus feet of the bona fide spiritual master. In the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada explains there are 10 basic principles in discharging devotional service, right? So this is from chapter 6. This is then defining the 64 items of devotional service. This is what defines sadhana bhakti, right? And sadhana bhakti means vaidhi and rag. This is what you're going to do until you become liberated, right? So it's one of those things, unless you're already liberated, it's one of those things we need to get used to, right? So when he's, this is the beginning of the list, the first 10. 1. Accepting the shelter of the lotus feet of the bona fide spiritual master. 2. Becoming initiated by the spiritual master and learning how to discharge devotional service to him, from him. 3. Obeying the orders of the spiritual master with faith and devotion. 4. Following in the footsteps of great acharyas, teachers, under the direction of the spiritual master. 5. Inquiring from the spiritual master how to advance in Krishna consciousness. 6. Being prepared to give up anything material for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. This means that when we are engaged in the devotional service of Krishna, we must be prepared to give up something which we may not like to give up, and also we may have to accept something which we may not like to accept. 7. Residing in a sacred place of pilgrimage, like Dwarka or Vrindavan. 8. Accepting only what is necessary, or dealing with the material world only as far as necessary. 9. Observing the fasting day on Ekadasi. And 10. Worshipping sacred trees like the banyan. These 10 items are preliminary necessities for beginning the discharge of devotional service in regulative principles. In the beginning, if a neophyte devotee observes the above-mentioned 10 principles, surely he will quickly make good advancement in Krishna consciousness. Out of them, the first three, namely, accepting the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, taking initiation from him, and serving him with respect and reverence, are the most important. Right? So this is the, you could say, your, what's that called?
Basis.
Yeah, the basis. What do we yeah, the fundamental of this particular point, but what do we call it? Huh? No, it means in the beginning when you're doing a chapter study. Yeah, the pratigya. This is the particular focal point of the section. Like that. Yeah. That was what yours was about also. And yours also.
It seems strange that you got all these very like things with, and then you throw them in there worshiping trees.
You worship also with the tree.
Yeah, with pulse.
So then you shouldn't use the tree, you should say. Pulse. It's pulse is the tree.
Yeah. But banyan, you've never done a study of something you've been introduced to in the sky.
This item, as it's worded, has been in the Nectar of Devotion since it was published back in the 60s. So you've never come across it before?
Yeah, but just like in this presentation, this seems, I mean, not poetry, but I'm not sure.
He's bringing out that like these 10 are necessity. In other words, he's bringing out the point that without these 10, then you can't take up. They're preliminary. Without them, you can't take it up. Right? Without the next ones, it won't go nicely. Right? Then you have the next 44. Those are then your, you know, basically your daily practices based on the previous 20. Right? Does that make sense? It means try to catch the principle here. Why he's done this? Because otherwise, if he only does up to, you know, 6. No, I mean up to 5, which is deal with the spiritual master. You know, then this nice thing about giving up everything, residing in the holy place, accepting all that's necessary, Ekadasi, which is fine, right? So that if he leaves out, does 9 there, and leaves that out, then it says these 10 items are preliminary. Right? Then you'll ask, well, what's the other one? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So, therefore, all 10 are presented. Does that make sense? Now, the point is like Banyan, it says. Is like Banyan. So the point is, Banyan is worshipable. Right? Now, if one's not devotional, one would be worshipping Banyan. Right? Because Shiva lives under a banyan tree, they're auspicious. The material world is compared to a banyan tree. He's a banyan, so therefore it's worshipable. But because we, being devotees, then we worship Tulsi. And so then the worship of all these other sacred trees is already taken care of. Just like if you worship Krishna, you don't need to worship the demigods. Right? But if we respect the demigod, it's not a problem as long as we see it in relationship to Krishna. But there's no need. You know, so the Shris, they take it to, you know, very strongly. They will have nothing to do with the demigod. Demigod temple, they'll just walk by. They won't, you know, think anything good about it. They won't engage in any kind of connection with it. Nothing. While the Madhvas, then they see all the demigods as servants of the Lord, so there's many of them that they worship, but as servants of the Lord. Right? Well, we're not interested, but at the same time, if something's there, you know, we know that they're a servant. So it's not a big problem for us. Does that make sense? So like Banyan means that category of worshipable trees, but Tulsi is the prominent, so that means worshipping sacred trees, like the Banyan. So we happen to worship Tulsi. So does that work?
Yeah. I understand why we worship Tulsi. But what is the general principle in worshiping?
Because this is the Vedic principle. All these are our Vedic principles. So Akadasi standard, even the you know, Mayavadis and them, they follow Akadasi. You know what I'm saying? So these are all standards. It means you're going being prepared to give up something for the Supreme. Here, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the point is whatever is supreme, whatever is your worshipable deity, you have to learn to give up for them. So this has been written in this way.
These stands are common for any sadhaka in
Krishna. Basically, yes. That's why it's said, that's why Prabhupada made the statement that someone who is religious following a non-Vedic thing, it won't be as good, even they're very developed in it, it won't be as good as someone who's on, let's say, a Kali worshipper within the Vedic system. Because a Kali worshipper has a guru that's coming in a line, they accept scriptures, they have a sadhana, they adjust their lifestyle to their worship. While the non-Vedic, most of them, especially Westerner, there's no adjustment in lifestyle. Okay, you don't eat your grandmother or something. but other than that, what is not edible, you know, in the Western concept? You can't eat humans. Right? And it would be, you know, considered bad to eat garbage and stuff like that. But other than that, what living entity is not, you know, fair game?
What's in the bag?
Well,
I don't know. Chinese eat some stuff that's pretty...
Yeah.
Some of those funguses are pretty hard to digest. And they don't drink milk because they can't digest it. You know what I'm saying?
What's the principle behind worshipping trees? I mean, what's the significance?
That I'm not exactly sure. But there's some element of that there's some... There would be some element of the Supreme Lord or something that's there that makes it, would make it. But what exactly, I'm not sure. My question that comes up is, since the topic is Guru Padashraya, why are we so worried? We do realize we're quoting directly here from Prabhupada's translation of Nectar Devotion. You know what I'm saying? So the point would be, what what's the significance of trees? You know, yeah. They're considered pure trees. They're used for yoga, and that means all trees produce oxygen. They produce ozone, so they're very good for meditation. That's one of the things. You know, just the mood. But just like cow is an animal, the soul is in ignorance. But the body is in goodness, and what they produce is beneficial for. So therefore, meditating under the banyan trees, there's so many things that come from them, used in yajnas, like when you churn the fire. That's done where a banyan tree and I think a peepal tree, they've grown so close together that the trunk has become one. So that point where the wood is in between the two, that wood is special wood. It's special wood. They make what's called the arani. It's a thing where it's got a lower piece of wood, and then it's got the middle piece of wood and the top piece of wood. So the bottom one is fixed, the top one you hold, but the middle one you put the rope around it and you churn it. So this wood is special in that it will get red hot but not go into charcoal. All of the wood will go into charcoal. So it becomes red hot, so when you touch it to cotton or anything, it'll start to burn. That's, if you can't start the fire by mantra, that's the next best. Because you have to be pure to make it work. Does that make sense? It won't just, it's not just anybody can do it. You know, if you want to do that, then you have to get out your flint and stuff like that. Then it doesn't matter who you are. In a sense. So there's all these different elements that they're special for that. So of these special trees and Tulsi, because they can give auspiciousness, but Tulsi can give bhakti. Therefore we stick to, you know, devotional piety rather than. Is that okay? Yes.
It's also explained in Puranas that different demigods, including Lord Vishnu, reside in different parts of the banyan tree.
Oh, okay. Like the cow.
Okay.
That's a good one. He was saying is just like all the demigods reside in the cow, the 33 million, then, you know, the cow is also then sacred and worshipable. So, in a similar way, then, I don't, all of them or many of them?
I've heard about Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva.
So, the various, you know, prominent demigods reside in various parts of the banyan tree, so therefore it's also worshipable. That's why it's not a problem if devotees worship it, they understand this point. But since it's not a general known point, you don't have to worry about it. But I know one devotee here in Mayapur. He knows these. He's a, you know, scholar and all that. And here there was one particular tree he'd always worship. You know, because he can't worship all of them, so he'd pick one. And, I'm not sure. I think his wife still does the worship. Yes.
It's more practical though, because here, being prepared to give anything material for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're doing service, and let's say a guest arrives, and then sometimes you are in between. Should I? And let's say the guest wants to talk for 1 hour or something. Sometimes I'm in doubt where and how to put the right perspective on pleasing Krishna.
Why do we have a temple?
To go and worship Krishna and please him.
And it's only for those living in the temple?
That's very good.
Okay, so this guest coming, are they one of the, in the, one entity in the category of everyone? So then, and so the service being done in the temple technically is so that we have the facility for everyone to come. Mm-hmm. Right? So that means then the guest becomes very prominent. Mm-hmm. If there's some time-bound element, then that may be considered, you know, so is there some element of it that can be done and then the rest done later, or can we get someone else to do that service or get someone else to take care of the guests? But the idea is that you have to get, see that both of them get done. It's just you have to see time-wise, which is this. It's not that I'm busy doing service, so therefore the guest is a disturbance. No, the temple is there for guests. Does that make sense? Because the temple is Krishna, so this means technically they're Krishna's guests. They're not our guests, they're Krishna's guests. You know, we can ignore our guests. How do we ignore Krishna's guest? So therefore, we being the house servants of a Krishna, therefore when guests come to his house, then we have to find a way to take care. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just what's the best way? What would be? You know, it's like you could do it later, so you could talk for an hour, but you'd rather not, then that's another thing. You know?
I've heard that, it's correct, but in Haritan you don't stop his worship to
take care of a guest. Yeah. And then you'd also see what you're looking at in the way of guest. You know, so you could stop, tell someone to sit a little bit, and then do his puja, and then come back. It would be some similar senior, they might stop, take care, and get him situated, and then go back. You'd have to see what's the situation. But basically, yes, that's the principle. The guest comes to take care. Prabhupada used to make the point that when they visit these aristocratic gentlemen, and they in days when they used to do puja, that they wouldn't come out to see because they're doing their puja. And his point was, is they're doing puja to Krishna, and to Krishna's devotees come, and so therefore they should be coming out and greeting, and then, you know, seeing if there's anything to do in this and that, and then going back to the puja. Like that. So that's the general thing. That doesn't mean it's an excuse to get out of doing the puja, because the puja still has to be done. So it's just the two are added. So you can't avoid and or use it as an excuse.
An example of avoiding the Lord's bodhi came, and there was a devotee dressed ready to go on the altar, but it wasn't his day, he wasn't prescribed to do the offer. So the temple person came in his street clothes and said, "You nonsense, you rascal, it's time for the Lord." He ran on the altar with his street clothes and brought the Krishna to bow, and then the devotee goes, "Why didn't you take care of the Lord?"
Yeah. These are all the things that were talked about in the last chapter. Right? The last section. It's not my day. It's not my, you know, so it's like work as far as. Okay, so now we're adjusted with the pratigya. Yeah? Okay, so. A summary of Pancha Samskar, an article by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, published in his journal Sajjana Toshini. It is said in the Shastras that a person who receives Pancha Samskar can practice two kinds of devotion, Vaidhi Bhakti and Raganuga Bhakti, and attain the eternal happiness in the eternal abode of the Sri Hari. Those who read this instruction with faith want to know the meaning of the expression Pancha Samskar. I guess he means those who read without faith are just kind of like, won't care, yeah. In order to help them, we will first explain the conventional understanding of the term and then give its deeper significance. Tapa, mudra, nama, mantra, and yaga. These five items comprise Pancha Samskar. They are cause of intense devotion to Lord Hari. When a faithful person learns about Pancha Samskar, he approaches a religious teacher and humbly requests for his initiation. After considering the student's sincerity, the teacher mercifully gives tapa and mudra to the student in order to sanctify his body. Oh, tapa and mudra. What did I say? Yeah, because tapa and mudra are the same. Tapa means it'll be explained, but tapa means that marking, that external marking that signifies the understanding that the material world is a place of misery. Right? In other words, the element of it, the burning element of that one is, you know, burning in the fire of material existence. Right? And pundra means that external marking that identifies that you understand that there is a path to elevate one from that situation and bring one to the perfectional platform. Right? So that's tapa and pundra. Some religious groups give tapa by marking the student's body with the symbols of Lord Vishnu using hot iron brands. Lord Chaitanya Dev, however, has instructed that we mark the body with Harinam using sandal paste instead of brands. This rule is a blessing for the souls of Kali Yuga. Right? So for us, then that's the, we'll use the neck beads, you know, or you can put the names in the body, or if you want to use the symbols of Vishnu, you put them on with chanda, not with hot brands. But Shri's Madhvas, they use the hot brands. Someone had a question.
No. Also, it signifies that's how they consider that the student is serious when he's going to accept to have the brand name.
Yeah, look, that's the point. You wear neck beads when you're committed. It means we're going out and doing neck bead sankirtan. That's not exactly, because that's part of the process of initiation. But since the dollar is supreme, therefore you could sell anything if it'll make money for Krishna. Right? but technically you don't sell neck beads as a fashion. You know what I'm saying? That's not the point. Yes.
Is this some are talking about three times around, two times around? Like, is this just nonsense?
Those are other things, but the point is there. It's that it's part of the process of recognizing. It's part of the process of taking up. So the neck beads are worn that signify that one's doing, but we don't then consecrate that with the brands. Because, see, the Shris and the Madhvas, they don't wear neck beads all the time. They only put, when they do puja, they'll put on the neck beads. Do the puja, when they're finished, they'll take them off. So that's why they'll make comments why we're always wearing Tulsi neck beads, because they'll say that's not proper. It should only be worn when you're doing auspicious activities, when you're in a pure state. Otherwise, you shouldn't be wearing them. But when it's explained to them that this is our mudra or tapa, right, then they understand. Yeah. So then, you know, that's the point. Is Tulsi represents Vrindavan, right? The forest of Vrinda, right? And they, Shankar Chakra got in. They were the Shankar and Chakra. Then that's, it's the Lord's symbols. Right? So then it works. Pundra or tilak are vertical lines drawn on the body. The Shastras interpret them either as symbols representing the temple of Hari or as his footprints. Right? So there, as temple, then that would mean that the leaf on the bottom is the shikar, right? Or the dome of the temple. And if you're taking it as his lotus feet, then that's the tulsi, which is Adi's lotus feet. So both are correct. It's not this one or that one. Or this one's more devotional, or this one's more about Sikh. You know, it's just, no, both are correct. Because the Lord resides there. Nama, or name, is the third samskara. The teacher mercifully utters the name of Hari in the ear of the faithful student. This name is to be recited daily by the student. During initiation, the teacher also gives a personal name to the student, which indicates devotion to Hari. Right, so nama also means is the spiritual name, and for us then the holy name, something that will be chanted as a regular item. So we can see here is that generally all these five, they're one, one process. I mean, they are one process. They're generally one ceremony. It all goes together as one, but for us, then we've seen it's been divided into two. It's just two parts of one ceremony. But because of the nature that previously, generally, people were going to taking up and being serious about spiritual life, then they're approaching the spiritual master. Then, when it's seen that they're serious, they'll get both at once. So initiation means first and second together. Right? But for us, seeing that the spiritual master is going out and looking for us, then after the preliminary period, then there is, you know, first initiation, then after some time, then second. Right? So there needs some time is necessary to develop the actual culture of a disciple. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yes.
This division was made by Shna Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur?
Yes.
Before it was always one.
Yes. Like that. Because the point is before that, it was only those who were serious about it then came and surrendered. But when you had the facility of the temple and that dynamic preaching where you could catch everybody, then there needed to be more of a gradation to get to the platform of the full initiation.
But I've heard that It is also Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati reintroduced the Brahmin thread.
Reintroduce the Brahmin thread. What does that mean? Reintroduce them. It means Brahmins haven't been using, before Bhaktisiddhanta, they hadn't been using them for a long time. Brahmins don't use them. As Vaishnav Samskar. So are the 10 Samskars for Vaishnav? Yes, so then...
No, but it's something I've read that before the Vaishnav didn't care for that, then they started to
care for what?
The thread.
So what does the threads indicate?
Upanayana,
which is one of the Vedic Samskars. So what it was is Vaishnavs, that Upanayanam was not a prerequisite for Vaishnav initiation. Therefore, those devotees that were from Brahmin or Dvija families where they had Upanayanam and were therefore wearing a thread, then when they got initiated, then they just did the Pancha Samskar. They didn't, the Vedic was already done. Right? And for those who weren't from families that would have had the Vedic Upanayanam, then when they approached the spiritual master, they just got Pancha Samskar. They didn't get the Vedic. They're two different things. Does that make sense? So it's not they didn't care for. It was, if you had it, it's done. If you didn't have it, don't worry about it.
But they would still receive a Gayatri, an 18 silver mantra?
You would want them to get 17 or 19 silver?
No, but it says out of his mercy that he should give the 18, like a Gayatri, right? It's a certain meter.
Yeah. Like no, but the point is, so, but then that means that the thread and the mantra are, you know, intricately related by what you just said.
I'm asking.
But do you understand it's a different point? Or is the thread and the mantra, those two are synonymous?
No, but they always...
No, so what does the thread indicate?
That you can purify yourself in the puja. You
know. But so what samskar does that require? Yes. So the thread indicates someone who has upanayana. It doesn't indicate someone who has pancha samskar. The thread is not automatic with any kind of initiation. It's only, it goes with upanayana.
So
it's a Vedic samskar that goes with the Brahma Gayatri. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So it's nothing to do with these Pancharatra Gayatris.
So you would have
someone who has Pancharatra Diksha, or what we call second initiation, and not wear a thread, if they weren't from families that already had Upanayana. In other words, their Vaishnav guru wouldn't be giving them Vaishnav Vedic the samskar.
But also they would not receive the Brahma Gayatri, just the Pancharatra Gayatri. Yes?
Are we making a distinction here? Yes. Okay, let us back up. As a presence with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we're getting three initiations. You're getting the Vedic, which is Upanayanam, you're getting the Pancharatrik, which are all the Gayatri mantras, Mula mantras, and you're getting the Bhagavat, which is the holy name. Okay? But they're three distinct, separate entities. Right? So, Upanayanam is the Vedic. Pancha Samskar, and that has a ceremony, the Upanayanam ceremony, that it goes with it. The Pancharatrik ceremony is a different ceremony, and what goes with it are the Vedic mantras. The holy name has no ceremony, and, you know, it therefore has nothing that goes with it. Right? Okay?
The Pancha Samskar.
Wait. And then, so?
Brahmagayatri is not a Pancharatri-gayatri.
No, it's the Vedic.
It goes with Upanayana.
Yes, and it's not, it goes with, it is the Vedic.
It is.
Yes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So that means you can have a Brahman, a bona fide Brahman who has Upanayanam, but he doesn't have any Pancharatrika Bhagavata initiation. And you can have someone who has Pancharatrika initiation, who doesn't have a Brahman thread and doesn't have the Brahma Gayatri, and also may not have, you know, the Bhagavata initiation. Right? Like that. Though generally they would. Generally, because Vaishnavas are always Bhagavata. But they may not have the, you know, like we have the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. I think the Shri's Om Namo Narayanaya they chant. You know, or Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, or like this. So they have a mantra like that that goes with it. That's the meaning of here. So here's that 18 syllable generally means Om Namo Narayanaya or Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. That's what you're talking about there. Okay. So then, because the 18 syllable means Gopal, that comes with mantra. You see, that's the fourth samskara. Right? Right. So, then, and you can have those who have Bhagavat initiation, so they have the holy name, but don't have Pancharatrik or have Vedic. You know what I'm saying? So they're distinct situations. You can have all three, you can have two, you can have only one. Like that. So so that was how it was being practiced up to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But because of his difficulty with the Goswamis, the caste Goswamis, they're only accepting someone as able to be a guru, to able to, you know, discuss philosophy and shastra, able to do puja, able to do all these things, if they're Brahman by the Vedic consideration, because that is their claim to fame. Take away that, then there's not a whole lot to jump up and down about, right? So, therefore, since Vaishnava is the perfect state of being a Brahman, he gave the Vedic initiation along with the Pancharatra and the holy name, so that they would have the thread, so that the caste ghost Brahmins would leave the Vaishnavs alone. They would understand. They would respect them. If they didn't respect them as Vaishnavs, at least they'd respect them as Brahman. And at least that much they have to be nice. But because they didn't have a thread, they were Vaishnavs, they wouldn't respect them at all. So at least this way, it gave less opportunity for them to send themselves to hell, yes, you could say. And they might appreciate, so they might get some sukriti for appreciating a Vaishnava. And Vaishnava. Yes.
Well, it was discussed here as conscious samskar.
Yes.
That's the...
So what were this, the Upanayanam is not part of this process.
So that's the Pancharatra.
This is Pancharatra. Pancha-samskara is Pancharatra. Not that you don't have similar elements, but this particular definition, this is Pancharatra. Right? It's based on the Vedic. Pancharatra is a combination of the Vedic applied into Bhagavad. It's a bridge. Right? So it has its own terminology. Right, Bhagavat doesn't need these terminologies. Right? It'll be elements of the philosophy and the culture and the practice. So is this okay? Yes.
You think it's going to be a question that Kavaraj was probably saying is you describe what Nityananda is as if and I've been initiated by him.
I would expect, because generally all the acharyas there are all initiated by Bhagavat. Like Prabhupada says, the six Goswamis are direct disciples of Lord Chaitanya, but there was no Pancharatrik samskar. So that means that his instructing them, that's their initiation. Like Rupa Goswami, you know, and Sanatana Goswami, those sixes, those are their initiation. Is that make sense? So. You had something? Or? No?
Samsara.
Samsara.
Final samsara.
What did you say? Samskara. By
No, the next paragraph reads the final samsara.
That's a title. And so it's the two paragraphs of nama or name is the third samsara. Yeah.
Out of his mercy, the teacher gives an 18-syllable mantra to his beloved student. Mantra is the recitation of a short prayer which corresponds to the particular deity one worships. So that will be your Pancharatri Gayatris, you know, or any Pancharatric mantras. Like Gopal mantra is not a Gayatri, but it is a mantra. So here when we say 18 syllable, we're meaning Gopal. But all these others go with it, like that. So sometimes they just might have one or they'll have many, so we have many. The final samskar is yaga, or deity worship. Using the mantra which he has received from the guru, the student begins the worship of Shaligram Shila or Sri Murti. By receiving Pancha Samskar, a faithful person enters Bhajana Kriya, or the personal worship of God, which eventually leads to the pure love for Sri Hari. So here is that Pancha Samskar. So since we're beginning this process, then one is already, the Bhajana Kriya is begun. So we're beginning it with first, but it becomes serious at second. Right? Like that. Because, yeah, that one is initiated, it means you're committed. But with second, that means the one is what is seriously committed, right? Because generally, what's the difference between first and second? What are you looking for? It's been around a while. No. I mean, why would an authority consider someone as a proper recipient of second initiation?
Mature in practice.
Majoring practice.
Mature
in practice. Okay. Majoring in practice. Like that. It means after he's done a bachelor in practice, then he does a major. You know, for his undergraduate, he majored in practice. Minored in theory, yes. Okay. That's the one we want, right? The guy has too much theory, so that's why he should get. Why he doesn't sit around. Okay.
Development of the mode of goodness.
Okay, that'll help.
They're committed,
right? They're more serious. In other words, their bhajan is more serious. So whatever that may be, their study is better, their service attitude, their preaching, their Vaishnav etiquette, whatever it is, there's some development that we would say, this is standard now. This is good. You know, this is the standard. So then the balance of the samskaras are given. So then it's complete, so the Bhajana Kriya, then one will be well situated in Bhajana Kriya, right? But, and anyway, the process starts.
So, yaga.
Does that make sense? So that means the person who's just come to the temple, he's chanting, he's offering his prasad, he's doing this, but it's still shraddha. Then when the need to associate with devotees becomes more, that he comes regularly or more associate, then that's called sadhu sangha. Right? So he's developing the ability to associate. When that becomes more serious, then he gets initiated, then that's bhajana kriya. Right? It's not that bhajan's not going on, but it's just that stage is called bhajana kriya because now one has the mantras, that then one worships the deity, does all these aspects, so all the aspects of the bhajan are in place. Does that make sense? So, but it's not that he hasn't given up anartas to develop that faith or to take up the association of devotees. You understand? And it's not that not by doing bhajan that he hasn't developed that faith. He's associated with the devotees. And you know, chanting hard, doing kirtan and taking prasad. And from that, then he develops the faith that I want to practice this seriously. You understand? So these names are given not that they're exclusive. It means that that's the prominent element. Bhajana Kriya means your practice of the bhajan is the prominent aspect. You're trying to get good at it. You're trying to remove the different, you know, get And so that naturally gives rise to anartha. When the practice goes nicely, then you start to see what's wrong with it. Right? And then that goes more. And then when that is balanced, then it comes to nishta, which means the bhajana kriya is now fixed as opposed to being unfixed. Right? So shraddha, sadhu, sangha, bhajana kriya, anartha, nivriti, it's considered to be anishta bhakti. Right? And then nishta means now it's nishta bhakti. So from nishta on, it's nishta bhakti. Not that, ruchi is not nishta bhakti, right? You know, it's not that it becomes unsteady again. No, it just means that's the division, because that's the division between the neophyte and the madhyama. So the madhyama is more fixed and steady. For the neophyte, he may be, you know, very enthusiastic one day he's not. You know, there this and then not. And so that kind of thing. So, yes? No? Yes. What? Is it on this point, or we'll get to it? Because now what we're going to do is we're going to go, that was the form of it. Because he said before there's two levels of it. So most think this is it. But actually there's the subtle meanings, the esoteric or the philosophical or the cultural meanings to these things. So that's actually the work of the body of the papers on that. So if it's why do that, that'll come up now. If it's something just on to be clear on that, then.
The Aranyaka.
Huh?
Aranyaka.
Yes.
Oh, I just wanted to know if Yaga really specifically points to Archana or just in the worship of Krishna in a more general way.
It specifically means the Archana because it's Pancharatra, which means Archana. You're getting the mantras that are used for our worship of Archana. That's specifically what it means. But the preaching and all those are you could say more important, but one has to understand is just because one goes out preaching, that doesn't mean that one has transcended Pancharatra. This is a major, major mistake that sometimes full-time Sankirtan devotees make. Because what they don't realize, probably most devotees don't realize, your lifestyle is Pancharatra. Right? Bhagavat doesn't define get up in the Brahma Muhurta. Because you'd be chanting all the time. Whenever you're awake, you'd be chanting. You'd be thinking about Krishna. So to make sure that you're... And so there wouldn't be need of regulation because you'd always be thinking of Krishna. The point of regulation is to devolve your involvement, it means your attachment to the material world, and to increase your attachment to Krishna by not doing any nonsense. So Pancharatra is designed that you'll be leading a regulated sattvic life, that you won't be doing any nonsense, that are going to get in the way of the devotion. That's what Pancharatra does. So getting up at Manga, getting up in the Brahma Muhurta, rolling up your bed, cleaning the room, brushing your teeth, you know, going to the toilet, cleaning your tongue, taking a bath, putting on clothes, putting on tilak, wearing neck beads, having a sika, tying the sika, like that, washing your clothes, going to the temple, offering your obeisances, ringing the bell, saying Jai, you know, Jai Radha Govinda, like this, Mangal Arti, Japa at that specific time, hearing Bhagavatam at the specific time, worshipping Tulsi, taking prasad at the specific times, like that, the rituals of how prasad is offered, taking of Charinamrita, circumambulating the deities, every last thing I've said here is all Pancharatra. None of it's Bhagavat. Chanting the holy name is Bhagavat, but that means you're chanting all day. Chanting, you know, 16 rounds, you know, generally at a specific time or whenever you can, that's Pancharatra. Aridas Thakur, that's Bhagavat. So if you're doing that, great. If you're not, it's Pancharatra. So therefore, the same kind of devotee is going out, doing his little Mangal Arati, you know, him and, you know, the other guy, you know, he's half asleep. So, you know, like this. And yeah, that's one way you could do it. So one holds one card pole, one holds the other. They both have to be kind of awake to make it work. And if the other guy always falls asleep, have him hold his teeth.
that would not.
Okay.
I guess it was bad for us.
I see. Yes.
They're all Bhagavat. But that's the point is though how one's performing that. One can perform them according to Pancharatra or according to Vedic. You know, regulation and everything. So you make sure you're doing. So like we're saying, we're performing karma yoga generally means you're engaging Vedic elements in devotional service. Does that make sense? Or our general lifestyle is Pancharatra engaged in devotional service. So technically they're non-different, but at the same time, there's a difference. Otherwise, we make a mistake and think, oh, we're above all these things. You know, we're the Sankirtan devotees. We come back to the temple. We've done our work. We don't have to do anything. Now we just sit back and, you know, give the class, do the kirtan, and take the shot. But everybody else should cook, clean, take care of the guests, and all that, because, you know, we're doing the supreme work. Like that. But the point is what they don't catch is that there's only a building for them to come back to. If they want to live in their bus 365 for the rest of their life, which I don't know of one Sankirtan devotee who's ever done, then that means they're going to at some point come back to a house or a temple. So they're comfortable with that. So that means they get support from Pancharatra. And then to claim that they're higher, that's sad. That's a misunderstanding. So that's why we're making a difference here between them. Because so far up to now, all the questions have come from not understanding the difference. One or two have been on a specific point. You understand? But generally, it's we don't understand the difference between these three and how they all fit in our life. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like devotional service. In practice, it's a combination of karma yoga, jnana yoga, and dhyana yoga. But to study it, they're studied separately. Then we get confused. If we just say, serve Krishna with body, mind, and words, then we're not confused. But to be able to tell the difference, what's engaged with the body, karma, you know, what's engaged with the mind, the dhyana, and what's engaged with the intelligence, the jnana, then it's they're discussed separately and then they're put together. Right? So in other words, the Vedic initiation, the Pancharatra and the Bhagavat, we're discussing separately and then we put it together. Right? So now what he's going to discuss of the subtle points, that's actually the Bhagavat. That's the Bhagavat element of the Panchasamskar. Right? And generally, then there's a form, the ritual that's there, its connection to the deity, that makes it Pancharatra. But many times the form that is followed in that, the inherent form, that's Vedic. So Pancharatra means Vedic rules that are connected to the deity. You know what I'm saying? So Pancharatra specifically would be worship of Tulsi, is connected to the deity. You know, or understanding that Vishnu lives in the banyan tree, therefore is connected to the deity. Right? Guests are the Lord's guests, therefore is connected to the deity. So those elements from the Vedic that are what would be called ekayana, which would be directly connected to the deity, or are in support of those things that are directly connected. Like taking a bath is not directly connected to the deity. But worshiping the deity is, right? So taking a bath is very supportive of the process of worshiping the deity, right? In other words, deity, Krishna being the supreme person also has the supreme nose. So he likes baths before puja. Right? Does that make sense? And it's just part of the process. That's why it's like the devotee who is bathed and ready, he should do the puja. While the one who's dressed in the karmic clothes or been outside shouldn't be the one doing. Because not that you couldn't, oh, don't be so fanatic. But the point is it's Krishna's nose, not yours. Okay, you don't mind living in a piggery, great. But Krishna doesn't like that. But if that's where devotion is to be had, great. But the point is it's the devotion that's important. So if it's for Krishna, then why not make it completely for his so therefore you'd make nice. Right? Why do we use a silver plate or some other nice plate instead of just a plastic plate for offering the bhoga? It's nicer for Krishna. You know, as far as our standards, hey, plastic's great. You drop it, it doesn't break. It's easily available. You can get them on sale. You know, you never hear a sale of, you know, silver plates. On sale. Like that. It doesn't happen. Right? So, does that make sense? So, it's because in consideration of Krishna that all these things are there. Right? But if one only sees the rule, you have to be clean, and then it's only worship, you've missed the point. No, when it's devotion, it's only worship. So part of the devotion is being clean for Krishna. So when the person says, don't be fanatic, he does have a point. Right? Because you missed the point of the devotion. So his attachment to rules and your attachment to non-rules, they're kind of, at this point, equal. So each one can't complain about the other. But as soon as you bring in devotion, then the following of the rule would be considered a better situation than not bothering of the rule, because that means you don't know why you're following. But when it comes down to not following a rule and getting the service done, or following it and not getting it done, then better to get it done. Right? Better the offering is made in karmic clothes than it's not made. But it should be worked out. It's not that, oh, now it's okay to just wear karmic clothes. You know, that's not the point. Because then that makes the aropia bhakti, because the reason of doing it is aropia. I like the karmic clothes. Yeah.
That seems to fall back into the category either karma or jnana, either one.
Yeah.
Or the...
Yeah. Yes.
Regarding this doing it right and compared to doing it, I know there's in the Danish temple there's a tradition that during Janmashtami and Guru Purnim, guests and visitors get to bathe the deity. And it gets them involved, and it seems to work out nicely. How do
you could get them involved in other things also. We used to get them involved in helping with the decoration, or kirtan, or prasad. Mm. See, it's like this. They chant the holy name, even they haven't taken a bath and, you know, wouldn't know the difference between, you know, the various, how you say, apertures of their body, you know, and the cleanliness. So therefore, they get full benefit. Right, clean or unclean. Taking prasad, it also doesn't matter. You can feed the prasad to an animal, they get benefits. Mm-hmm. So that's there. But deity worship, it's the Lord has come because there's a standard of worship you said you're going to follow. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that, oh, it gets them involved. Mm-hmm. You know, but you know, so many things get them involved. So why don't you have them go in the kitchen and cook also? I'm sure some of them are good cooks, probably even better than many of the devotees. You know what I'm saying? You know, they could get involved in taking care of the accounts, you know, or counting the money. Why don't you get them to do that? You know, hey, here's a you know, a junkie. He loves money. So why don't you send him that? Let him count. You know? Like that. Just check your fingers after you handed him the money. Nothing's missing. You understand? So why that? It's because there's no understanding or value in it. So then, and then they'll say, oh, you're a fanatic. No, it's not a matter of fanatic. It's a matter of somebody's not clean. Why get involved in that? By watching it and by doing it, you get the same benefit. That's the far-out thing about Pancharatra. Because it's understood. How many have the qualification to offer Mangalarti? But there's more people can be involved. Right? So the Vedic will leave so many of those people out. The Pancharatra doesn't. But it means they get the benefit by being there. So it's a matter of why would we establish a tradition that's not specifically a tradition? Right? Jagannath Mandir, it came that way. It was the way it was already being done. So it's going on. Plus you have to consider that who is coming to worship Jagannath on Snan Yatra and, you know, and offer things to him. Who's coming?
Mostly local people.
Local people. Okay? That means they were born where?
In the Dham.
Yes. So does that mean they're just regular, ordinary blokes? No. They're born in the Dham means they were devotees before. How serious or not, that's another thing.
He said that one has two visions, see that they all have 4 hours.
Yeah, like that. That's mentioned next to the book. So that's there. Plus, most that show up are Hindus. But it's not that some Muslims don't come. But the point is Muslims coming, it's definitely a devotional element. So that's different than, and they understand what worship means, Abhishek means this and that. These others, they wouldn't know what happened. You know, you could get them there to, you know, get them to, you know, do this or something like that. And, you know, they would think, okay, hey, great, I can do that. Yeah, I think I can do that. You know what I'm saying? So it's not a necessity. It's a matter of lack of ways of engaging people. That's all, you know. It's just like, I remember one devotee telling me, is it New York? He happened to wander into the temple, you know, like that. And then they were putting up the decorations. So he said, hey, come over here. You know, like that, here, hand me this, do this and that. And he happened to be in the interior decorating. So then he was able to, you know, I thought, great, wow. You know, so he got into doing all that for the temple. But now it's like, you know, that kind of stuff doesn't necessarily happen. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Like so then the only thing they can think that's an activity is then to do Abhishek. Mm. But, you know, why not other things? You know? Before it was, you know, they could cut sabji, they could clean, they could know now all that. So why would they join Krishna consciousness if they have to clean the floors and all that?
Yeah.
You know, but they don't actually understand that even these other traditions, that's considered, if you want to become a Jesuit, which is the preaching branch of, I think, the Catholics,
yeah,
the hardcore preachers, for 2 years, they come to whatever is the monastery or wherever it is they're going to be trained. For 2 years, all they do is menial service. They clean. They don't do anything else. They don't study one thing. They just work their backsides off cleaning. Then after that, then they do all their divinity studies. And when they finish the divinity studies, you know, all the theology and everything, then they're supposed to go out and get a PhD. Because then the karmis will recognize them. You know, because they may or may not appreciate the divinity. It's good enough for them. You go out and get something that they'll do. So you also know their way of thinking, right? Then, having gotten your PhD, now you come back to the monastery and do another 2 years of menial service. No study. So you may study on your own, but there's no classes. Then, now you're ready to go out and preach. So there, that means out of their process, which you're talking many years, 4 years of it, is just working. So the idea of working in that is not foreign to all other religions. You know, it's like you go to the Golden Temple, you know, the Sikhs temple in Amritsar. You go there, they're distributing prasad. They're at all the corners, because it's a huge place, you can get water to drink, or sometimes they have something else depending upon if somebody's, you know, sponsored. They have these bell metal bowls that you drink from, and afterwards, each time, polished with ash and washed and then put back and then like that. All that is being done. I think in taking the shoes, when you walk in, the shoes are kept. All that's volunteer. There are no one from that lives in the place is doing those activities. They're doing the rituals and this and that and so many things like that. So the idea of doing service, and you've just gone to take darshan, so you go in and then you'll spend some time, you know, washing those things or take care of it. You'll do it for a short time, 10 minutes, an hour, you know, whatever it is you have to. So this idea is not foreign. But we get to think, oh no, they won't be impressed. The point is what impresses them is not that, you know, it's not you walked into LA Temple and said, wow, look at all the onyx. Wow, I want to join this. You know what I'm saying? That's not why it works like that.
When I was a teenager, the highlight of my week was going to the Sunday feast and being asked to sweep the floor afterwards.
Okay, yeah.
So,
yeah. So that's the thing, is that one becomes purified. Krishna gives one happiness from that. You get knowledge and detachment. You get faith. That's what comes from doing any service. So if that's understood, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura, there's that famous story that some great pundit, big scholar came and wanted to discuss some philosophy. Came to Bhaktisiddhanta and he said, oh, you have to speak to this particular devotee. He gave the name. So he's going through and trying to find anyone he would think would be, you know, a scholar. And they all go, no, he's over there. But then he'd go up to someone that, until he got to the end of the line, until he found out he was the guy that, you know, cleans the cow pen and shovels all the cow dung. You know, it's covered from head to foot in cow dung. He came, and he's the one he's got to speak to, because he knows he does nice service, so he actually can explain devotional service. Yes.
Jananda, that's how he made so many devotees.
Hey, can you give me these bumps?
Yeah, anything. He would just engage him in anything. Mm. Yes.
So many devotees.
So that's the point of service, is the thing. So we don't want to take it the other way. So as there's before, many times you sat down and did the great sin of opening a book, then they say, the book tells you to serve, and now we got this for you to do, so stop reading. You know, so you'd have that as one extreme. And then now it's like, you know, unless it's like a seminar or something, then you won't even read the books, because unless it looks good for the, like this. So the proper thing is, this devotional service is what gives one a taste for devotional service. It's nothing else. It's not all, you know, modern, new agey in that presentation. No, that's nice that it's, the atmosphere is clean and everybody deals nicely. But there's principles they're looking for. They're just looking for it's clean. They don't mind it's clean and it looks Indian. You know? And even if you want chairs, there are Indian chairs. You know? Like that. But whatever it is, it doesn't matter. You know, somebody takes care of them. You could use Western hospitality, you could use the Vedic. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter, you know, like that. They're just looking for, it's nice, it cleans, it smells properly, people deal properly, there's some intelligence there, there's some piety there, and there's some supreme there. So if you can accomplish all that, you'll impress anyone. You know, it's not that they're worried about the thing, because otherwise they go on vacation to Bali or Borneo or, you know, someplace. You know, it's not that, you know, they're from New York, so hey, for a holiday, why don't we go to New York? You know, they go to someplace else. So the idea of getting a different experience is not bad. Because if it's just they're gonna come in and sit on the couch and kind of do what they do at their home, it's kinda like, well, they can do that at home or do that at their friend's house, why come to the temple? Yes.
Maharaj, I see that for some people, what kind of doesn't attract immediately is when they find that there is a mechanic act, the devotee is doing that without awareness or without.
Yeah, so it's. But it's lack of consciousness, so it's a ritual. So the point is, they already got rituals that they're doing and it's driving them nuts. They get up in the morning, they brush their teeth, they drink their coffee, they eat their donut or their whatever it is. They get in the car, they drive the same road, same amount of time to the same work, sit in the same thing, do all the same. They want something different. So if it's just going to be a more ritual, that's. But if there's some meaning to it, then they'll look at, he's happy, is it because he's doing this? I'm not doing that. You know, or if he's just doing it in an unconscious state, well, I do that all day, so I don't need to replace it. If they're smart, if they're not, you know.
So even cutting potatoes, washing the pots with consciousness can be very attractive.
Of course. The point is they're attracted by consciousness, by intelligence, by commitment. This is what they're looking for. Other things are they already have. Right? They already have. Yeah, they're looking for something real. Some people think that prema can be obtained without pancha samskara. This is incorrect. The conditioned soul has become hostile to the divine, and consequently his original spiritual nature has become distorted. As a result, he must sanctify himself before that true spiritual nature can develop. The best way to do that is through pancha samskara. Right, so in other words, initiation is important. Yes.
Maharaj, he says pancha samskara.
Yes.
While Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, who divided this pancha samskara, like this, I've read in Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava that this guy was a gardener. He only had first initiation. He had only Nama, he didn't have. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati told him personally that for you this is enough to achieve prema. So whether yaga and mantra are necessary to achieve prema, or the first three of five are sufficient?
Three or five?
Three from five. Three.
Oh. Why don't we continue with the discussion? you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's discussion. You know what I'm saying? Because basically speaking is that it's individual. But the point is he has pancha samskar. He's involved in these things. But it's a matter of how he's looking at it. You understand? But then to take that, that without initiation you can go back to Godhead, but then why wouldn't you be initiated? Wouldn't you have a guru? Even if you don't have Diksha Guru, why wouldn't you have Siksha Gurus? You know what I'm saying? There's so many senior devotees who are preaching so nicely, and none of them you feel that they add something dynamic to your life, then there's something wrong. So how would one go back to Godhead? You know what I'm saying? That's the principle being discussed here, not the detail. That's a detail. You understand? So that will come up. He will explain it. Okay. When we see someone whose nature is not distorted, we conclude that he must have received samskar in a previous birth. On the other hand, samskar is not needed for the liberated persons because their nature is not distorted. Still, in order to set a proper example to others, even liberated persons receive pancha samskara. Right? We even see Lord Chaitanya. He goes through the process. You know, Krishna, whatever is the process at the time, then the Lord and all the great personalities go through it. You know, so it's standard. So if someone has seems to have that samskara, then we can understand he's already previously done it. So that also could answer the question. This devotee's already done those aspects before, gotten the benefit, and now he's able to apply it in whatever situation he's in. You know, because you take that example, or what he gave example, Jayananda. Because Jayananda, you don't think of a big pundit or a big scholar or, you know, a big manager or this or that. You just think of him as a devotee. Does that make sense? Samskars exist in every religion and in every country. Although we have not had the opportunity to thoroughly study the samskars of all religions, we at least can say that the samskars of the Aryan religion appear to be of a higher order than the samskars of other religions. The samskars of the Vaishnava culture are the best part of the Aryan religion. No other practice is as sacred and complete. Because we don't see that the samskars are the element of developing that, situating one in goodness, right? And regulating the life and bringing about a lifestyle of dharma, right? Because in these others, much of the time you may have a faith, a religious faith, but you don't necessarily have a religious lifestyle. So the Aryan, there's a religious lifestyle that goes with that religious understanding, that religious faith. Then of the religious faith, that highest religion means faith in Vishnu, then that puts the Vaishnava samskaras as even higher than the Arya. Like that. So just in this way one can define. Right? You can't say, well, you haven't checked them all, but that's not their purpose. Right? They're not, because you can see in the lifestyle and that, they're not regulating to that degree. Yes.
Can we trace those other religion samskaras to those Arya samskaras? Like there is, I don't know the English name, the ceremony of baptizing in Christianity. Should we somehow connect them? Or
is it important?
Sometimes for preaching.
Why do you have to? What about taking crystal glasses and pouring various, aged liquids into them and clinking the glasses together? Should we connect it back? Or having drunk that, turning around and throwing it into the fireplace, and if it breaks, it will give good luck, and if it just bounces out, then you got a problem. Should we trace that one? What about on certain, day of the year, then people go out with rolls of toilet paper and hang a very opulent amount in people's trees? You know, or at a certain time of the year, all the men from the dormitory raid the women's dormitory and steal their underwear. Or that to be a Hell's Angel, I've always heard that one of the initiations is that, you know, with your clothes on, then all the other members of the group pass urine on you, and you don't wash those pants. Yes. So how many of these rituals do you want to connect? You know what I'm saying? What is the need to make that kind of point is that samskara is there for purification. Therefore, we see in any established religion, they have samskaras. They have their rites of passage. So the principle of rites of passage, that's good. So we have our rites of passage, but our rites of passage are meant for developing love for God. Right? Well, whatever their purpose is, as long as it's... That's it. You don't have to get into detail of the connection, because where will be the connection? Right? How will you make the connection? After the student has finished studying, right, in the Gurukul, under the spiritual master, and he's perfected his, you know, training and knowledge, then they have a samskar called samvartana, at which one of the elements in it is the teacher will sprinkle water on him, and he'll be known from that time as a snataka, or one who has been bathed. So you want to connect that to taking the person and just shoving him in the river and taking him out? You understand? So what's the common point? The common point is that commitment to something. That's the common point. So that's why this paper is written, is that we'll start looking at some scars from a new light. And so from that point, you preach from there, you'll find you'll be way more successful. And it's a common thing, we try to connect the mundane, but that's not what impresses them. You know what I'm saying?
Sometimes even it brings up a certain security, because they're thinking, so why are you trying to accommodate? Are you not confident
enough
in your...
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, and also it brings out that maybe they don't really have to change, because we're already doing it, kind of.
The point is that you have to change the consciousness. So if they remain doing whatever they're doing and change the consciousness, that's what we want. So it's that the person has taken up chanting Hare Krishna. He's still non-veg, but he's chanting. Or the person isn't chanting japa yet, but he's a vegetarian. He became vegetarian. After coming to the last Sunday feast, he became vegetarian, but he's not chanting. Another guy came to the Sunday feast. He's not vegetarian, but he started chanting regularly. So which of these two is the better one? The chanting. But generally, devotees will take it that when they become vegetarian, that's good. Right? They're doing yoga. It's close. You know, they're vegetarian, so we're doing some great preaching. No, if from being vegetarian and then he associates and then he'll take up the... Then it's just whichever way, wherever they start. It doesn't matter. But the point is it's the change of consciousness that is the actual essential element. Yes.
So in Bhakti Yonata, of course, presentation means to take the rituals to another dimension.
Yes. It means they'll come up like that. But what he's saying is, he's pointing out is that these are the different things. These are what they've done. Right? And then, you say, only through the Pancha Samskar are you going to develop love of God, right? And so then just establishing why that is because the conditioned nature is a perversion of the natural nature of the living entity. So Samskar is necessary to purify that. So if you see that natural purity is there, that means Samskar has been there previously. That's why you see this. So if they don't have it, they need it. If they already have it, then you set example by taking it. Does that make sense? Like that. And so, that's the... Okay. So, just to give a touch, but we won't get much discussion. is now from this next one, this is now explaining what they actually mean, right? The student who is burning in the fire of material life, who analyzes this predicament and concludes, my relationship with material nature is not permanent, therefore I must take shelter of a spiritual teacher to obtain the mercy of God, has reached the stage of faith, and it is qualified to take shelter of a spiritual teacher. The teacher should observe the student for 1 year and observe his atonement. During this examination period, the student is encouraged to atone even more. And when the teacher is satisfied, he brands the student with the symbols of conscious disc. These marks are permanent and symbolize the purity that the student must maintain for the rest of his life. This is called tapa, the faithful soul's first samskara. Right? In other words, what is it based on? It's based on he understands material life is not where one is going to be successful, and one has to take shelter of the advanced devotees. Right? That's tapa. So when it's come to the point where it's, you know, established nicely, then that samskara is complete, so that mark is there. Does that make sense? So it's not so much... Yeah. So that's what consciousness one is looking for. And as pointed out, why they use that is permanent, because that understanding is permanent. If you ever think that material world is a place to enjoy, then it's lost again. One will become entangled. Right? Yes.
Is it connected to when we use the word tapas as being performing austerity, or is it just...
It's connected, meaning that the word fire is there in both. But here is the one is tapa, meaning that you have the fire of the material existence. He says burning in the fire of material life. So it's understanding that one wants to give that up through surrendering to an advanced devotee. But tapasya, you could be performing that to elevate yourself to the heavenly planet, right? Or some other pious thing. But they're connected, because when it says here to atone even more means you're doing tapasya. You're engage in those things that will be favorable to devotional development, and avoiding those things will be unfavorable. Is that okay?
So maybe the austerity would be more punya, taking the path to
God. Not so much that. It's a matter of, if you're looking at just the fire, it's a tapasya to purify yourself. But it's not that they're directly connected. It's just that the tapasya, the root word, that has it somehow or another connected with fire, that's all, or heat, like that. Okay, so continue tomorrow.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Prabhupada ki, Sanavita Bhaktivinoda ki, Janitai Gaurav.